Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Where are you coming from in this one?
Your 100% essential download.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
You let this get out of control.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Jim White, and today myself and Simon discuss Mo Salah and Marcus Rashford's futures at their respective Premier League clubs. Is Salah set to stay at Anfield for a final season, despite the touchline tiff at the weekend? And is Rashford set to leave United as Sir Jim Ratcliffe prepares for a summer clear out at Old Trafford? Leicester City are back in the top tier after winning the championship. A Jamie Vardy double at Preston sealed the title. Does the Foxes veteran deserve a final swan song in the Premier League? Plus, Premier League clubs have voted in favour of developing plans to introduce a spending cap. Football finance expert Kieran Maguire joined us in studio to explain more. This is Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Leicester City are back in the Premier League and they are taking the championship title with them. It's been an emphatic performance from the very first whistle. Jamie Vardy, he brought the party for Leicester, as he always does. Two goals, one either side of half-time.
Well done, Leicester City. They overcame Preston last night 3-0, and they have secured the championship title. It's Premier League football for Leicester City and Jamie Vardy, if he wants it, once again. Enzo Maresca was thrilled.
It's impossible to win all the games. So we draw points against Millwall, against Plymouth, but I said many times, we didn't drop our performance. The performance was good, we created many chances. Unfortunately, we didn't take the chance, but overall, we were good. Championship is very difficult, very intense, but at the end, we did it. We bring this club where deserve to be, but we said many times, the reality this season was completely different from the last 10 years, but we adapt and we did well.
Do you know, Sam, I was just thinking, I mean, Jamie Vardy, 37, watched it last night.
Yeah.
He more than played his part and scored a couple of the goals. You wonder, going into another season and it's a Premier League and Leicester, more than anything else, want to go up and stay there and they need goals. Maybe he's the man to do it. Does he deserve another Premier League swan song, or do you think it's his final act? And that's it. Goodbye, says Jamie.
Yeah, I mean, I have mixed emotions towards Jamie Vardy. You know, I often sort of think of him as sort of Wilfred Bramble lookalike character.
You often think of me like that as well.
I do indeed. You would be cut from the same cloth, you two.
Yeah.
But I think if you played...
Jamie and I know what we think of you.
Absolutely. I'm sure there's plenty of opinions that you have of me.
Right.
34 games this season, 18 goals in that hard league like the Championship. So clearly he's been playing most of this. I don't know how many of those appearances are substitute appearances. I don't know what kind of character he's around the dressing room. If he's a good character, I'm imagine he would be. Mm. I don't think that that's the case, that ultimately he hasn't been at Leicester. I thought he was, years ago when he had the chance to go to Arsenal, there was something quite admirable in some people's eyes, would say, well, lack of ambition. In other people's eyes, like mine, it was a bit of integrity that he didn't want to go to Arsenal. He wanted to stay at Leicester because ultimately he saw the relationship between him and Leicester. He's come from a background of non-league football, lower league football, got into the higher echelons, produced at that level. So if he's good around the place and is valuable to the squad in that respect, and the economics can make some degree of sense, which I think they would do, because if he's not going to stay at Leicester, I don't really see him going to another Premier League football club. He'd have to go into a lower division.
No,
and
that's
perhaps
true.
Get less money, or maybe go over to Saudi or one of those opportunities.
Yeah,
I think that possibly he may well have earned himself an opportunity to have another year at Leicester. How that would sit with him, because you don't see him perhaps having a starting lineup berth. But then he's not had one this year, I think, a lot of the time.
Mm. He says he doesn't want to retire.
Oh, why should he? You're a long time retired. And it's nice to see when you see younger players like David Bentley back in the day getting falling out of love at football and retiring at 28, 29 years of age. You think to yourself, ooh, you know, you might regret that in the future. And maybe he didn't, but this guy wants to play. And because he's come through the system and because he understands the other side of football, yeah. Or maybe because he needs more economics to pay for his wife's court bills, I don't know. Maybe what his motivations are. But the point is that if he wants to play and can still play, then this should be a place for him to play at a decent level.
Well, they've done it. They're on 97 points. Leeds are second on 90 points. We know what happened to them on Friday night at Loftus Road. Ipswich on 90 points. But Ipswich have played a game fewer than both Leicester and Leeds. So beat Coventry tonight. Ipswich will have one foot in the Premier League.
They'll need a point. They'll need a point if Leeds win.
It's live and exclusive on TalkSport 2. And Kieran McKenna, who I think would agree has impressed us greatly, he just said it's all about embracing the moment.
There's different emotions at this time of the year, especially on the back of a game, depending on how it goes. But, you know, all season we've been very much look forward to the next one. Be grateful for the work that we've done, the position what we're in, and grateful to be involved in such good games like this. So, yeah, we're going there on a Tuesday night. We know we're going to have a fantastic away end. We're coming off the back of a great game on Saturday. We've got a home game on next Saturday to look forward to. This is our last, you know, game in front of our away fans, and we'll look to give everything we can in terms of the performance to try and get a result to make everyone happy.
You think they're there, Simon? You know, tonight, if they get something out of Coventry, they're as good as.
Well, look, what's their last game of the season? I'm just trying to look at it at this moment in time as I'm talking to you, because I think there's a game at the end of the season that they're home to Huddersfield. Huddersfield are nigh on relegated. In fact, I think they probably will be by that stage if they're not already. So Ipswich Town at home, last game of the season, trying to get a win, you would expect to do it. Now, I remember, situations in my time where in the last game of the season we needed to win and we lost. And it was inconceivable. We managed to get into a situation of success because someone else did their results. But I think that Ipswich now are in control of their own destiny, where they'd like to be. If you'd have said to Ipswich 10 games ago, certainly at the beginning of the season if you'd have said it, but certainly just to say 10 games because their expectations are now, they've been in the top six all season or the bulk of it, you're going to have two games against sides that are not playing for very much and you're in control of your own destiny. They'd have bitten your arm off at the shoulder. They're good enough. They're capable enough. I think they're well run. I think their manager's done everything right. The recruitment, the attitude, the outlook, the whole ethos of the club is great. Mm. And I personally, without trying to be biased, would like to see them get promoted. It also underpins another argument that not every club that gets relegated gets promoted straight back up again automatically, because that argument rages, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But that also means that Leeds drop into the playoffs, and I'd like Leeds to be successful. I think Ipswich will do the job. And if they don't do the job, then they've only got themselves to blame.
I think so. I think you're right. I must admit, I'm very, very impressed by Kieran McKenna. Spoke to him at the EFL Awards night, Simon, and I think Ipswich be very keen to see what they could do. So they're at Coventry tonight.
Yeah, and they've got Huddersfield at home in the last game of the season.
And Huddersfield at home.
I don't want Kieran McKenna to have done this interview with you, to have won this award and got it almost precipitously because he's talking about the achievements, got the award, and the season's still not done,
yeah.
Which is what I said to you, because I think he's done most things right. Just when you thought Ipswich might be coming off on the boil because really they didn't have the squad depths or the quality that might have been in Leeds' dressing room or Leicester's dressing room, they came again.
Yeah.
And so from that point of view, I'm hoping that Ipswich Town, after God knows how many years, 2002?
Yeah.
22 years outside of the Premier League for a former side that won the UEFA Cup in 19, whenever, yeah. Alan Brazil was there, or and Eric Gates and whoever else, and all that goes with that Ipswich Football Club, and David, yeah. Sheepshanks was their chairman. It was quite forward thinking in the late 90s, early 2000s. I think they deserve it. I think they really do. And the way that ownership seems to run that football club, fair play.
It's well interesting, well isn't done. It? From Maresca to McKenna, Rob Edwards company, how good is the Championship if relatively new managers seemingly breeze it?
I think those are outliers. They don't breeze it. I mean, let's look at the examples. You're talking about two clubs coming down from
101 points.
Sure,
last season.
But they had the biggest wage bill. I mean, Burnley is a different one because you can really make a case for how well Vincent Kompany had done in terms of he'd come from managing in Belgian football, one of the elite sides in Belgian football. He came into Burnley and he made them change the way they played. They would still have had a bigger budget than most teams in the league. So there is some nuance to that characterisation that you're seeking to advance, which is how difficult is the league. It's universally accepted that it's one of the most difficult leagues in domestic world football to get out of. There's so many clubs that are trying to achieve it with big budgets. But you know what? Good is good.
Oh, yeah.
If you're good
yeah.
and you can do your job, in clearly the case of the managers that you just spoke about, then you come to the surface.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you do need to have a balance between being very young and dynamic and effervescent and very clear views and some good experience. So the balance is often there. If you look down the balance of probability, you'll see more experienced managers over the last 10 or 15 years getting out of the championship than first-time round managers that are creating an impression.
OK, well, Coventry against Ipswich, it's live and exclusive on TalkSport 2 tonight. We'll see if Kieran McKenna and Ipswich can get themselves there. At the weekend there, Simon, you go to Spain quite a lot. Billy Vunipola headed off to Mallorca. Didn't really go the way he planned it. We're going to talk about that next.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
A spending cap is on the way to the Premier League for the first time, but will the devil be in the detail? Football finance expert Kieran Maguire will join us very shortly for that.
Proper expert.
Proper expert. But here we go, Simon. One of the great and the goods from English rugby, the Saracens and England rugby player Billy Vunipola, has been given a 4-month suspended prison sentence. He's been ordered to pay a fine of about €240, about 205 quid, and €500 in damages following an incident in Mallorca over the weekend. The police in Mallorca alleged in a statement that Vunipola pushed and slapped an officer, although the player denied that there was any violence involved, but he did plead guilty to resisting the law and to wounding. Vunipola had travelled to Mallorca on Saturday morning with the full Saracen squad and management after their victory over Bath on Friday. TalkSport's rugby commentator Andrew McKenna joins us live in studio. Andrew, good morning to you.
Morning, gents. How are we?
Good. Thank you very much indeed. Doubtless, Andrew, you know Vunipola. What was your reaction when you heard about all of this?
I was a bit surprised, to be honest, as probably everyone else was. As you mentioned, it was an official team trip. Saracens had played Bath on Friday night. They've been knocked out of the European competitions, which are being played this weekend. So therefore, Saracens are in a somewhat unusual position of having 10 days or so without a game. So they've taken the decision to go away as a group, have a bit of a time away. And they made the journey on Saturday. And obviously then this happened on Saturday evening. So not an ideal way to wind down and do whatever it was they were planning.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed to go from bad to worse for him, Andrew. I see that Vunipola is alleged not to have obeyed police orders, and at one point when they tried to overpower him, he lunged at one of them and caused him an injury. It became worse when the police arrived and they had to call for backup. This all comes with the backdrop that he had not been drinking for a while. It's understood that Vunipola had been teetotal for nearly 2 years before this weekend, having turned away from alcohol to improve his on-field performances. So can you give us any more detail in that area?
So to sort of go back and give it some context, Billy Vunipola didn't start drinking till he was about 25 years of age. He, at a very young age, made his premiership debut at 17. So in a previous interview, he said, essentially, he didn't have that sort of normal late teenage life that a lot of people would do, where you sort of start the social scene or whatever, because he was a professional athlete from the time he was 16, 17. And it wasn't until his marriage got into trouble around the age of 25 that he then decided he was going to start drinking. So he had a few issues with that, as you mentioned. He decided to go teetotal to give himself a chance of making the World Cup squad. But obviously, these things are never straightforward. And there appears to have been an issue here, because in none of the statements does it mention alcohol. But it certainly would appear that if you're in a nightclub at 4 o'clock in the morning, that it does seem fairly straightforward to put those two and two together.
Andrew, what do you expect from Saracen's point of view and then the RFU? Will both take action?
Well, that's now the big question. Saracens have two regular season games left of this season. We would expect them to make a playoff semi-final given the position they're in. So that would be one more game. And if they win that, they would make the final. So therefore, he's got a maximum of four games left this season, and therefore a maximum of four games left in his Saracens career, because he is moving on at the end of the season anyway. He's going to Montpellier in France. So if he picks up any kind of ban, then that could potentially impinge on going to Montpellier and being available straight away. The RFU can charge Billy Vonnepola if they so choose. There's a clause 5.12, which is the old conduct prejudicial to the interests of the game charge. And they have used it before. Danny Cipriani back in 2018 was charged under that when he was in an incident in Jersey when he was a Gloucester player. The charge was actually upheld in the RFU hearing, but they decided not to take it further because the Jersey magistrates and Gloucester Rugby Club had taken action against Cipriani himself. So therefore they said, well, you've already got two things. We don't need to do anything else. So it will be very interesting to see if the RFU do anything. My feeling is they will wait to see what Saracens do in this situation again. And therefore, I would imagine Saracens will potentially sit Billy Vonnepola out for a couple of games. They're in a good position in the back row anyway with Ben Earl, Tom Willis. So it may be that Billy has played his last game for Saracens and realistically his last game for England as well, because as soon as he moves to France, he makes himself unavailable for England.
Of course he does. Of course, that being the rules in rugby. Simon, when alcohol gets involved with sportsmen, with anyone, and I should talk, I've been there, done it, landed myself in all sorts of trouble, things can go a bit pear-shaped. Vonnepola has... previous in this, 2019, him and Benteo apologised to teammates after breaching team protocols by going out drinking separately after a Six Nations match against Scotland. You've owned a football club, Simon. Have you been in this situation before where you've had to listen, gather all the evidence, all the detail, and then make a decision?
Of course. I mean, ultimately, that's the most important thing to do. The press reporting of it is one thing. The implicit understanding of it is another. I've had it with players and circumstances at Palace. I'm also aware and helped in situations when Leicester City got themselves into trouble in Spain and Paul Dickoff and a few others got themselves arrested down in La Manga, and my lawyers helped them get themselves properly represented. I also know that, having lived in Spain for 25 years, that the Spanish police can be at times very heavy-handed. I'm not suggesting that bad behaviour should be condoned in any shape or form, but they don't tolerate any nonsense, the Guardia Civil or whoever it is he might have encountered. And so all of my main focus would not be to worry about the optics of what other people think. It would be to avail myself of all the facts and to make sure that whatever action I decided to take, I don't really think Saracens have got a lot of jurisdiction here because the player's out of contract in two games' time. Mm. It becomes almost a moot point. It becomes about the RFU and what they're prepared to do. And if we're talking about the link of rugby players and the culture of rugby to alcohol and behaviour, well, the fact that we've got so few instances of it over the years, despite a culture that, you know, you have of rugby players, we have this view of rugby players being very respectful on the field, but they can be, their fans can be vociferous and a little bit of a joking, drinking culture that goes around it in and around the game and in pubs and whatever else you want to talk about it. But the fact that we've got so little instances over the last 10 or 15 years, yet we have that as a staple diet in other sports, specifically football, doesn't lead me to a concern that there's a deterioration and a concern and a worry for Billy Vonnepola. And it's a question for you, Andrew. Is he completely ruled out of playing for England as a result of playing in another league, irrespective of how many caps he's got for England? Because I thought there was a qualification that if you'd played a certain amount of caps for England, that you could still find yourself back in the side, irrespective if you didn't play in English rugby.
No, Wales has that possibility with the caps. England don't have that. So it's purely geographical from an England point of view. Simon,
is this a one-off, Andrew? As Simon was alluding to, there have been a few instances, 2011, 2012, 2015, 2017, 2019, various moments with various players where it could be said an overindulgence in alcohol has led to problems for them. Rugby's culture with alcohol and socials, is there a problem? Is that a problem area for the sport?
I think it's a problem for everyone. It's something that you have to keep an eye on. But maybe what rugby has an advantage, say, compared to football, is that it flies much lower under the radar. The stories might be sort of there or thereabouts, but they're never going to be as big as the pictures of when Jack Grealish goes on holiday, or, you know, an insert name of other footballer here. So there might well be other cases of it, but the chances are it's just not being reported in the same way. I think from a professional level, the RPA, the Players Union, will do a lot of work on this to try and give players the best advice they can and to help them out in the best way that they can. So I'm sure there are other cases, but I think it's probably a case that more than anything else, we just don't hear about it. Perhaps my biggest takeaway from all of this, though, is the Spanish police, because apparently they had to taser Billy twice, because on the first occasion, they managed to hit his wallet. Well, he was wearing shorts and was apparently waving his shirt around his head. I'd love to know how they managed to hit his wallet. I mean, if it was Simon, I could understand that.
Yes.
But Billy?
Yes. Billy's wallet came to the rescue first time around. Not so lucky second time with a taser gun. Andrew McKenna, thank you so much. Billy Vunipola, obviously an episode that he regrets, and he moves on, and he is moving on to Montpellier in France.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Simon's hardly day goes by we do not talk about football finance, and this is another day, because a spending cap is on the way to the Premier League for the very first time. But will the devil be in the detail? Premier League clubs have agreed in principle to a cap on spending. The proposal of anchoring, as it's called, would mean the top teams' spending on transfer wages and agents' fees would be capped at a proportion of the amount the league's bottom club receives in TV money. If anyone can make sense of this, other than your good self, Simon, it's football finance expert Kieran Maguire. And I'm delighted to say that Kieran has joined us live in studio. When you are on with us, Kieran, and you're on YouTube, we're on YouTube and Facebook every morning, I look up there and I see you up there and I always think, oh, he's in his kitchen. Oh, he's in his living room. You're right in front of me here. Good morning to you. How are you?
I'm grand. Thanks very much for the invite.
Oh, great to see you. So, I mean, can we put this in layman's terms to start with, Kieran? Anchoring in layman's terms, what is anchoring?
What it's going to involve is you take the amount of TV money received by the club finishing bottom of the Premier League. So last year it was Southampton. They generated £103 million in money from the Premier League TV deal. And then you multiply that by a figure. So let's say it's going to be 5. 103 times 5 gives us a figure of £515 million. And then any club, in theory, in the Premier League can spend up to that amount of money on wages, transfer fee amortisation, agents' fees and player write-downs.
Is this a better alternative to the current profit and sustainability rules? Allowable losses of £105 million over 3 years.
It's different. I think the problem it's different.
Yeah.
It's going to involve more loopholes. I've already heard via at least one club there's going to be an objection to it, a legal challenge. I suspect also that the PFA, unless they are brought on board in terms of the discussions, they'll have a legal challenge in exactly the same way that they did when clubs in League One and League Two imposed a hard salary cap during COVID.
I mean, 16 of the 20 clubs, Simon, voted in favour, Manchester United being one who voted against. United's stance is that there should be no hard cap in the Premier League, as it would put English clubs at a disadvantage to the rest of Europe. Can you see their point of view in this?
Well, I can see their point of view in terms of where they are economically and what they're able to generate. The fact that the European leagues, in principle, have already started to do this, and the Spanish leagues have started to do this, and some of the intellectual capital behind this is from other leagues in UEFA in the first instance, kind of contradicts that argument. But Manchester United and Manchester City will have an objection, because Manchester United and Man City are perfectly capable of generating £700-800 million a year, as Man City are proving, and if United started to be a bit more successful on the pitch, they would be able to prove as well. So they won't like the idea that a business that can generate £800 million a year, that can be highly profitable, is being told what it can and can't spend on areas such as the fundamental cost of football, which is player salaries and player transfer fees.
Why would Villa vote against it?
Again, that's an interesting one, because Villa are obviously looking at themselves. I would imagine there's an element of thinking about where they're going, what they want to achieve. American ownership models, in one respect, albeit the contradiction in terms, is that a lot of this intellectual capital will be coming from an American principle of the draft mechanism being the teams at the bottom get rewarded with the most opportunity. The owners are protected. Whether you play in the Super Bowl, you play in the Super Bowl of leagues because the revenue is shared in a certain way, and it makes an even more even landscape for the franchises inside the NFL and the various different leagues. But certainly Man United and Man City, I would understand their individual point of view. The challenge for them is they aren't the only voices in the league.
Mm.
And they've had it for these six clubs or seven clubs that have been able to influence the direction of travel,
with
United and City being leading voices in it, may find themselves in a slightly different position this time around.
I mean, Kieran, we know the top team spending on transfer wages and agents' fees would be capped at a proportion of the amount the league's bottom club receives in TV money. So they haven't decided what the multiplier will be. The devil is in the detail. What's your take on that?
I think there's a bit of horse trading that's going to take place. And it could be 4.5 times, it could be 5 times, it could be 6 times. I did the sums yesterday. You know, clearly, the higher the multiple, the more clubs escape and the more clubs can spend. It has to be remembered that these rules are going to come in and sit alongside the fact that the clubs playing in Europe can only spend 70% of their income on squad costs, and the clubs outside of Europe 85%. And it's those rules which are applied first, and then the anchor comes in as sort of as a backstop. I think the fear is amongst the smaller clubs is how can we compete when Manchester City generate £300 million from commercial deals, Manchester United £250 million. They're the two biggest commercial successes in the Premier League, and that's why it's no coincidence that they voted against.
Kieran, I'm sitting thinking, and I think people at home or people everywhere driving around this morning listening to us on Talk Sport might think the same thing and ask the same question. Who's driving this?
I think the initial shop steward for this was Steve Parrish at Crystal Palace. From what I now understand, it's Tim Lewis at Arsenal, who thinks that the acceleration of the two Manchester clubs is so great that for a club such as Arsenal, which has sort of fallen behind in terms of its commercial development over the last sort of 6 or 7 years when it's not been in the Champions League, it wants to effectively say, if you're really good at selling, you know, Scott McTominay duvet covers or whatever the product's going to be, and Manchester United is, you've only got to go to Old Trafford on a Saturday and you see the success of the megastore, we're going to take that out of the equation and we're just going to focus on the TV money.
There is an allegation, Simon, we've spoken about this before, that FFP protects the cartel. No one can compete with them. What does this do?
If these rules were just being introduced and there was nothing else, it would be absolutely fantastic for those ambitious or aspirational clubs, the likes of Newcastle, Villa. You could also throw the likes of Forest and Everton into that equation, who want to be able to spend as much money as the owners are willing to throw in.
Yeah.
That would be great. I think it's the fact that you've got to satisfy the other rules as well. It won't actually make a lot of difference.
Has this season been a strange one from your point of view? Because you're right across everything financial. But we've seen what's going on with Everton, and Everton will now survive. So that's a kind of two fingers to those who are saying Everton financial impropriety. Forest have fallen into difficulties as well. We know what's hanging over Manchester City. Everywhere you go, Kieran, are you approached by people who say, what is going to happen to XYZ club in a financial sense? Because there's never been a season like it, has there?
That's right. I mean, I went to Bournemouth versus Brighton on Sunday, and fortunately, nobody wanted to talk about the football, because all that people want to talk to me about is the financial side of things. It's not jumpers for goalposts. It's not why we fell in love with the game. But because we've got a couple of extra zeros on the numbers compared to where we were 30 years ago, and the Premier League has been fantastically successful. The revenue's up nearly 3,000% over 30 years. That's, for a mature business, that's those incredible numbers. Everybody's now got a view on what is fair. And I think the biggest mistake that they've ever made is have this concept of financial fair play. Because if you are Newcastle, if you are Villa, if you are Everton and Forest, you say, well, it's not fair to us. We can't spend as much money as Manchester City or Manchester United or Liverpool or Chelsea. And we've got owners who are willing to put the money in to allow us to do so.
Yes. A spending cap then on the way to the Premier League for the first time. Anchoring. Do you think this is fair, Simon? Are you having this?
Well, you have to pare it back further than say whether it's fair or not. You have to look at the blunt instrument that was brought in to try and find some governance and the motivations behind that. Like everything else, you framed it in a certain way. The question is, why are these rules here? Why did they get brought in, and what is the enforceability of them and what they're evolving into? The reasons why they were brought in is because I used to think it was about controlling inflation and balancing the opportunity out. And as a former owner, I welcomed them because it would have controlled some of the things that a public domain business sometimes forces you to do. It's not about that. It's about protectionism. It's about the elite pulling the bridge up and saying, we're in the room now, we don't want anybody else there, because economically we've achieved what we want to achieve. So financial fair play was brought in under a false premise. And I now look at it and say, what is it that we're trying to fix? We have a Premier League which is remarkably successful. Why are we moving into economic asphyxiation? Why are we telling people what they can and can't invest into a football club, into a business that they choose to invest in? There aren't that many casualties inside the Premier League. In fact, there are virtually none. And what we're really talking about is the financial fair play rules being introduced, which is a contradiction in terms. Now you're moving into the terminology profit and sustainability. Where's the sustainability in allowing clubs to be able to spend the money that they want? It's all ridiculous, and it comes from potentially the ECAs of the world with regards to my dear friend Nasser Khelaifi, and the idea that the French leagues and the German leagues and the Spanish leagues cannot keep up with the economic powerhouse that's the Premier League. We're trying to fix a problem in the Premier League that doesn't exist. Distribution outside of the Premier League? Yeah, by means, let's have that argument. The EFL isn't getting enough money. Some governance around some of those clubs because of the nature of the configuration of 72 clubs in a pyramid system. Yeah, but what are we doing with our Premier League? And what's fair about it? But football has changed. You talked to Alan Sugar yesterday. He'll tell you that the football world has changed. The idea that the cook, the candlestick maker, the baker, the guy in the town that owned the football club, and all the players came from the local area and their community assets is what kept football together for so many years.
Yeah.
But that genie's out of a bottle now.
Right,
so
right.
So you do have to pivot.
We've got Simon here. Of course we have. We've got Kieran Maguire, top man when it comes to football finance and the information that goes with that. You are sending in many, many messages on this morning. I'm delighted about that. Jim, decorate the rules all you like. They're there to protect the top teams. Otherwise, explain why Manchester City haven't been punished or the smaller teams get rushed through because it comes across as very elitist.
That's not FFP though.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Liverpool expect Mohamed Salah to remain at the club, Alex, next season as he enters the final year of his existing contract. What's the background to this?
Well, I think this is massive news, Jim, not just for Liverpool, but for the Premier League as well, and for this summer transfer window. We know that last summer it was dominated by the Saudi Pro League and the big money signings that they were making. But it does look as if Liverpool are confident Salah will stay at Anfield at least for the final year of his contract. I think ideally they'd like to tie him down to an extension to that deal rather than let him walk out as a free agent at the end of next season. And even sources in Saudi Arabia are suggesting that they're not as confident as perhaps they once were. They could prize Salah away this summer. Obviously, we saw that rather unsightly spat between Salah and Jurgen Klopp at the weekend. I'm of the belief that wouldn't have happened if Jurgen Klopp was staying as manager. I think Salah would probably have towed the party line a little bit more. But what I'm being told by sources at Liverpool is that just because the manager is leaving doesn't mean the star player is walking out the door as well.
I see. But as Alex rightly says, Simon, that fresh in the mind is that little hissy fit on Saturday at the London Stadium.
And you question whether you would have had that if Klopp was going to be there in perpetuity. I know this is controversial and people are going to tell me what a clown I am and I should ride around in a clown car, but I'm not a fan of Mo Salah's. I think that he's an admirer of his. And I do believe that there's a distinct possibility he will leave. I know that there's this
Why aren't you?
Because I don't think he's as good as people make him out to be. I think he dives. I think he can be a fair weather player. I know this will sound ridiculous to people. I know that I'm going to make myself incredibly unpopular by saying it. Obviously he's scored lots of goals. I think when the going gets tough, sometimes some people stand up and fight and some people don't. And I just get this feeling that Salah can be one of those. And listen, it's an opinion. I'm sure I'm going to make myself unpopular. I'm sure it'll be cropped up and everyone can tell me what a burk I am. Unless Liverpool are going to get him to sign a new contract, which has to be a prerequisite for allowing him to stay or aren't wanting him to stay, they're potentially handing over a lot of money. And Liverpool don't run their club that way. If you look at the way Liverpool have run their club in spend patterns, if you look at the last half a decade, you know, Liverpool have spent 500 million euros. Manchester City and Arsenal spent nearly 850 million. And Liverpool tend to do it on the basis of how much money they can get in rather than how much money they can purchase. So I don't see them being in a situation where Salah walks out the door in a year's time. And I don't see Salah signing a longer-term contract with Liverpool because I think there's a huge opportunity for him in Saudi to be the first Muslim of superstar status to play in that league that ultimately relates to them. I know that there's a relationship between the Saudis and the Egyptians, which it doesn't make Egyptians the highest on the food chain in terms of the relationship ethically in those countries. But I still think that Salah, despite the protestation, if you want to sell him, you're hardly going to say he's up for sale on his last year of his contract, are you?
Yeah. You haven't been the biggest fan of the Saudi Pro League, though.
No, I'm not. No. I have, again, it's important to characterise. I haven't been a big fan when you've sat across the table from me telling me that it's the end of the Premier League, when you're telling me how much money they've spent and everything's going to go to Saudi.
I've never said it's the end of the Premier League.
That's why I push back and say, well, hang on, it isn't going to be the destruction.
No,
all the best players aren't going
to
go.
Simon, you always talk about nuance and
absolutely.
Context.
You spent the whole of last summer saying to me...
The whole of last summer,
this is during the transfer window.
What a boring time that must have been.
It was, actually.
Yes.
Repeating to me that this is the potential demise of the Premier League. Every single Premier League club
never said that. The demise of the Premier League, never said that.
All the best players are going to go there.
Nuance.
No, there is nuance.
There
is nuance.
A-N-C.
Like Barcelona are going to melt down.
Yeah.
And Messi was going to leave that season. All of these are not facts. They're just supposition. And so the reasons why I turn around and push back against the Saudi League is because, A, I don't think they were making commercial sense with what they were doing. And B, I don't see it as the challenge that others thought it was.
Okay, thanks for that.
You're welcome.
And when it comes to fact, I remember the phrase deader than a dead thing from Deadland. But anyway,
indeed.
Did that happen? Did the Saudis take over Newcastle? I'm not sure.
No, what's
Alex,
well?
Sorry about that. I'm fighting with the neighbour over the garden fence here. Manchester United, Alex, will consider selling Marcus Rashford if a substantial offer arrives and he tells the club that he wants to leave. What is your second guess as to the outcome of that?
I think they're stuck with each other, to be honest, because Marcus Rashford is on huge money. I don't think there's a queue of clubs wanting to sign him, certainly not on current form. I think the Paris Saint-Germain interest is fabricated by people close to Marcus Rashford to try and put pressure on United. And from what I'm hearing, United are not trying to force him out the door. They want to work with Rashford, who's a bit of a poster boy for their academy, certainly was last season anyway, and get him back on form. So I think at this stage, I would say it's highly unlikely that Marcus Rashford leaves, basically because I don't see that he has anywhere to go, certainly not the money that he's being paid at the moment.
Simon, before we say goodbye to Alex, we're coming up to 11:30. Seems a bit of a U-turn from one Ruben Amorim. Alex, you'll have noticed this. He was in talks with West Ham, and the intel on that was it was right here in London. Amorim has kind of backtracked on it, saying That wasn't the best move on my part. He says, travelling to London to meet with West Ham, he says it was a mistake. This is the Sporting Lisbon manager, of course, once linked with Liverpool. It was a mistake. The timing was completely wrong. I'm always asking my players to be respectful, and I wasn't, even if I informed the club before. I'm so sorry. I apologise to the fans, the club and the players. He made a mistake, Simon. He's manned up to it. But it seems naive with a capital N there, doesn't it?
He's saying it's a mistake because he's been found out doing it. Clearly, he felt there was an opportunity to do it. I mean, from what I've just gathered from what you've said, he told his club that he was doing it. So I don't really understand what the issue would be, besides the so-called wonderful expression that we all seem to have to live our lives by, which is optics. If his club, his employers, are prepared to allow him to go and speak to another football club, where's the problem? If I was the club, I'd be saying, no, you can't. And if he subsequently did, I'd say, there's the problem. But if he's gone to his club and asked them that can I speak to another club and they've said yes, I'm not really sure why anyone would be getting outraged, because they should be getting outraged at the people that he works for, who attach so little value to themselves that they're prepared to let their manager trot off and talk to whomsoever he wants whenever he feels like it.
I think, Alex, I don't think it would go down well with the Sporting fans, with the Sporting players.
No, and I think this is someone who's come back with his tail between his legs, either because he's met with West Ham and realised that he doesn't want to go to that football club, or because he was using West Ham as a bit of a power play to try and coax Liverpool to revive their interest. My suspicion is that that was the case, and he's realised the Liverpool job is not going to be his either. I think he'll probably stay at Sporting now, unless Chelsea decide to part company Mauricio Pochettino and they come calling. So I think this is just him trying to appease, as you say, the supporters. I think optically, to use Simon's word, it is a really bad look when you've got a manager at the business end of the season hot-footing on a plane to London to hold a meeting with a rival
again,
club.
But again, I asked the question, why would Sporting allow him to do that?
I agree.
Sporting management should be the ones apologising to the fans. They're the ones that should be saying, actually, we were rather remiss in our governance of this valuable football club to you to allow our manager to be given our permission to go and speak to someone else. Because the question is, did the guy leverage Sporting? I'm going to throw a tantrum and have a real hissy fit if you don't let me go and talk to them.
I think they're all big boys. I think Feyenoord were quite happy that Arne Slot said, yeah, God, you'd be silly if you didn't listen to Liverpool. So they haven't come out swinging or protesting. But I don't think Sporting would do the same.
But I'm telling you, as a former football club owner, that there's no parallel universe that I would allow my manager to wander off and talk to West Ham. It wouldn't happen. West Ham would have had to come to me and ask me my permission. And my permission would have been, no, thank you very much. I want to keep my manager. And so when you're comparing West Ham to Liverpool, Liverpool, one of the legacy football clubs in world football, I think that's comparing apples with oranges. And the idea that Sporting's directors are quite happy for their manager to sashay off and maybe do them the favour of not fancying West Ham and coming back and managing Sporting is the real reason why people should be apologetic, because I think it's outrageous. It's outrageous that he's been allowed to do that by his club.
You want to finish this, Alex?
Well, I was just going to say, the issue he's got now is that the players in the dressing room know that he's had his head turned and he's looking for his next move. The supporters on the terraces will know that as well. And so too will the hierarchy. So this does only end one way eventually. And that will be that Ruben Amorim, when the opportunity arrives, leaves Sporting and becomes a Premier League manager. I think it's a question of when and not if now.
Hard-edged, hard-nosed, hard to beat. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. We're back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's armodillo.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo, built to last, designed to impress.